Morning. In the interest of time, I'm calling the meeting to order, and today's date is January 2009. And I would like the record to reflect that Senator Kukesh is here, as well as Senator Pasban. Today on the agenda, we have Senate Bill 77, an act relating to the Joint Armed Services and its Homeland Security and Emergency Management Subcommittee and providing for an effective date, and as well as overview from the Department of Administration and an overview from the Department of Public Safety. I think it is fitting that the first bill for the Senate State Affairs Committee taken up this session is Senate Bill 77, a bill to reauthorize the Legislative Joint Armed Service Committee. This committee was created in 1999 to enable the legislature to provide support for members of the military in Alaska and influence decisions affecting our military installations. We have before us a committee substitute for this bill, and we'll get to that later, but I want to back up and see if we do have anybody that's online at the LIO offices. This time there is not. Okay. Let's see here. Would anyone from Senator Wilkowski's office like to come in? Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Bill Wilkowski. I'm State Senator for Northeast Anchorage, and I very much appreciate you hearing this bill this morning on, I know, very short notice. We introduced SB 77. It's basically a sunset bill. The Joint Armed Services Committee has been in effect, was created in 1999. At that time, Alaska was considered the site for deployment of a national missile defense system. In addition, the Base Alignment and Closure Commission, also known as BRAC, was soon to consider closing vital military installations in Alaska. Joint Armed Services Committee, or JASC, was created for a 10-year period to give the legislature a voice in the national debate over these issues. The committee has 16 members, which are appointed by the House and Senate, and it's been very successful in representing Alaska's interests in these matters and other issues relating to maintaining a strong military presence in Alaska. And as you mentioned, Madam Chair, Alaska has the highest percentage of military veterans in the United States, and this is a very appropriate bill for this committee to be taking up at this early stage. The committee was active in advocating for the establishment of the missile defense site at Fort Greely and in protecting Alaska's bases during the BRAC realignments in 2005, and the committee continues to play a vital role in monitoring developments that might affect the military in Alaska. It also seeks to protect the interests of Alaskans serving our country this coming May, pursuant to a piece of legislation passed 2 years ago. The committee will host a ceremony in honor of Alaskans who, since statehood, have lost their lives in combat. We'll be presenting the family members of these Alaskans with medals to recognize their service and sacrifices. On January 1, 2009, the committee sunset after 10 years. This bill reauthorizes the committee and makes it permanent. The House and Senate sponsors of the bill believe that a permanent JASC committee is warranted because of the strategic role Alaska will continue to play in maintaining the security of the nation. The original version of the bill sought to reauthorize both the committee and its Homeland Security and Emergency Management subcommittees. After further discussion, it was decided that this subcommittee did not need to be authorized. It has not been active for several years and can no longer operate as envisioned. The purpose of the subcommittee was to review and comment on confidential materials related to Homeland Security. All members were required to have federal security clearances at the secret level. It is our understanding that in the aftermath of 9/11, these clearances can no longer be provided to state legislators, undermining the subcommittee's ability to carry out its statutory purpose. Because JASC has ongoing projects and contracts which cannot be interrupted, we are asking that you consider moving the committee substitute as quickly as possible so it can get to the floor as soon as possible and be signed into law. And we appreciate your support and happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Okay. Does any member have any questions?
I do. Senator, what other committees of referral do you have on this bill?
This is the only one. Yes. And essentially, If you look at the CS, it says Sections 3 and 4, Chapter 6, SLA 1999 are repealed. And I have Tam Cook is on her way over. She's not here in the building already. And if anyone has questions, she can explain. But basically all this does is takes out the repealer language that's in the current bill.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any further questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Great, thank you.
Okay, is there anyone else in the audience that would like to usually have a sign-up sheet? I didn't get that sign-up sheet. Seeing no further discussion, I would ask for a motion to adopt CS.
I would move to adopt the committee substitute.
Okay, if there's no objection, so moved. Okay, thank you.
Do you want to move it out of committee?
Yeah.
Madam Chair? Okay.
I move that we move this committee substitute out of committee to the next committee referral. There's no committee referral to its next body of appropriate action. With any fiscal note, that's one motion.
Okay. So it has been moved that we move this out of committee by Senator Kukesh. Is there any objection?
No.
Seeing none, we'll move it out of committee.
Thank you very much.
Next, we are happy to present to you an overview from the Department of Administration.
Mm-hmm.
Would you please come forward and state your name and your affiliation and with a short presentation. Thank you.
All right, Madam Chairman. I'm with the Department of Public Safety. I don't know if you want to have administration go first or...
Yes, that's fine, administration.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, Senator Kukesh, Senator Passavan. My name is Joe Masters. I'm Commissioner of Department of Public Safety. Waiting confirmation, certainly. And what I wanted to do was spend a few minutes on a departmental overview and then discuss a little bit of or a few of the initiatives that we have moving forward and some of our departmental focuses for the upcoming fiscal year. I put together a PowerPoint presentation. I believe that each of you have slides in front of you. And what I'd like to do is move through these. And there's a lot of information in these slides. There's about 11 of them on the different departmental divisions and boards and councils that public safety is responsible for. And I've laid these out in a format where there's information pertaining to those on the right-hand columns and then the structure of the department and entities of the department on the left-hand column, if that would help you. The main divisions within the Department of Public Safety are the Division of Administrative Services, Statewide Services, Fire and Life Safety, commonly referred to as the Fire Marshal's Office, the Alaska State Troopers, and the Alaska Wildlife Troopers. We also house within the Department of Public Safety several boards and councils, and those include the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board, the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, the Alaska Police Standards Council, and the Alaska Fire Standards Council. On page 3 is the slide for the Alaska State Troopers, and within the Alaska State Troopers, we have detachments that are the normal patrol and response detachments, commonly referred to as A, B, C, and D, and so forth. You're probably familiar with that. We also have the Bureau of Alcohol and Drug Enforcement, referred to as ABAID, the Bureau of Investigations, referred to as ABI, the Alaska Bureau of Judicial Services, commonly referred to as a JS, and a newly formed Bureau of Highway Patrol, which we refer to as BHP, and the Village Public Safety Officer Program, and the Department of Public Safety's Training Academy. Some highlights for the Alaska State Troopers that I wanted to, and forgive me, I'm going to go through some of these fairly quickly because I know we're limited on time. I want to try to get as much information to you as I possibly can. The department last year in 2008 responded to over 119,000 calls for service or responses. About 10% of those generally are later referred to the justice system for prosecution or criminal action. The department is also responsible for 13 homicides in 2008, 100% of which have been solved. We also assist other departments with homicide investigations where they may not have the resources or the expertise to do so. And currently we have 6 ongoing homicide investigations that we're assisting other departments with. We do have a cold case unit, which concentrates on suspicious deaths and homicides that were unsolved from years past. Currently we have 72 open cases. We have 4 full-time investigators working those cases, and to date we have closed 29, and we're continuing to make progress. If you recall from this past year, some fairly significant ones were dealt with, the Kenneth LePink homicide with Michelle Linehan, and then also the Bonnie Craig homicide as well. We have just solved another one within this past week from Sitka, so we'll probably in the near future be hearing more details on that one as well. In the area of our drug and alcohol enforcement, we have in 2008 seized over 20, excuse me, just under $20 million in street value narcotics and drugs and other illegal substances. Some trends that we're seeing so far in the last year or two is that our response and investigation of marijuana grow operations and meth labs are continuing to decline. And we're attributing some of the decline in the meth labs to legislation that was passed in 2006 regarding precursors and their effects on the ability to get precursors without having to register or sign for them. So those we are attributing to success. Unfortunately, the users are getting their products in other ways, and that's, if we are seeing an increase in the number of cases for drug importation into the state, seizures in that realm as well. We're also seeing an increase in heroin cases, so those seem to be filling some of the void, so to speak. Alcohol importation arrests increased. We made 291 alcohol importation cases this past year. That's an increase of 30% over the previous year. We continue to have issues with sexual assault, sexual abuse of minors, and the most significant area seems to be continuing in the Bethel region. And this past year we had 337 sexual assaults, 375 sexual abuse of a minor cases. And although these numbers actually represent a reduction of over previous years, there's still serious crimes that we need to continue to combat. The judicial services, it continues to be very active and very busy and continues to experience increases in the number of prisoners having to be dealt with, the number of courtrooms that they're protecting, and the number of transports. 67,000 plus transports were experienced last year, which is a fairly significant increase over the year before. Which also was an increase over the year before that, so we're seeing increases there. We are working with the court system in a couple of different areas to see whether or not we can reduce unnecessary transportations for hearings that we may be experiencing. So we are looking at different things there. We also added 7 court service officer positions to rural areas. It's Specifically, we're putting two into Bethel, two into Nome Cots, one into Dillingham, one into Kenai, and one into Homer, or Anchor Point. And in these areas, troopers currently are doing those duties full-time. So by putting these CSOs in those areas, we're freeing up seven troopers to do dedicated trooper work. So that would be the equivalent of adding seven troopers as well. Search and rescues last year were 740 with 289 saves. We also had 62 highway fatalities in 2008, which is a decline over the year prior, and 19 of those were alcohol-related fatalities, which is also a decline over the prior year, but still too many. One of the efforts that we just embarked on is creation of a Bureau of Highway Patrol, which is a dedicated unit and dedicated function within the Department of Public Safety to focus specifically on highway fatalities, highway safety initiatives, and carrying out initiatives in conjunction with DOT and NHTSA, National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and their federal funding efforts. We are currently at 22 vacancies within AST, and you'll see in a later slide, we also have five within the wildlife troopers. So 22 plus 5, 27 actual trooper vacancies. We have an academy that starts on the 26th of February, and we're finishing up a recruitment selection process right now for that academy. And as of this morning when I checked, we anticipate offering 22 jobs to fill that academy. So with that and what we have in a hiring pool for lateral transfers of already certified police officers, we fully expect that going into fiscal year 2010 that we will likely have all of our trooper positions filled. We also have ongoing recruitment and selection going for our vacant CSO positions, which are those seven that I've already described, and then five other vacancies. So going into FY 2010, we expect to have somewhere around 37 new positions or within the state that have direct impacts on public safety.
If I could interject one of the CSOs, there are seven of those that are being added in place of the troopers, and then those troopers will be able to fulfill trooper duties.
I'm through the chair, yes. Senator.
Oh, excuse me.
That's okay.
That is correct.
Okay. Right. And what is the cost per CSO as compared to the cost per trooper annually?
I can give you a ballpark off the top of my head. If you want a specific number, I can get back to you later, or Dan Spencer, my administrative director, here, he may actually know that as well.
Okay. Senator Kukesh.
Thank you. Do you have any kind of program at all that has helped you evaluate the VPSO people who are already in a position to see if any of them would be interested in entering the Trooper Academy? I'm always concerned about keeping VPSOs and keeping them into the end of the program, but if you don't give them a chance to change their life a little bit by going into a different field or the same field but at a higher level, there's no incentive for them. And I really would like to see those kind of people who have some basic training already to get into that trooper program somehow, especially when you consider that most of the VPSOs are native.
Through the chair, Senator Kukesh. Mm-hmm. Yes, we have always encouraged VPSOs to look at whether they wanted to apply and become troopers. And we've had several. Actually, I am one of them. I was a VPSO when I first started my career back in the early 80s. And took the opportunities that were afforded to me and did that. There are some barriers internally that make it not necessarily an attractive change for VPSOs to become troopers. And one of the big stumbling areas is the fact that they have to move from their communities and that the positions that they may be able to fill are not in the communities that they're in. That's probably one of the strongest one. One recent thing that we did under APSC, and you'll see this bullet later on as well, is that we're looking at better ways for VPSOs to look at upward mobility within the law enforcement system, not necessarily within the VPSO program itself. And one of the things we just recently did under the Alaska Police Standards Council is voted to accept a VPSO basic training towards the ability to get a certification as a certified police officer with additional training that would meet the statutory requirements.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any further questions?
Yes,
Madam Chair. Senator Passban.
You indicate that recruitment is a top priority. Has there been any difficulties in the applicant pool or concern as to the applicant pool as far as the quintile that they may be at, and whether once they are retained, whether there's been any difficulty keeping the troopers that have been, all the money invested in them for this training and all of that? What are your thoughts on that?
Through the chair, yes, Senator. With our effort, we have to constantly try to balance the fact that we don't want to change our standards and lower the standards to allow unsuitable candidates into the ranks that we're going to have to deal with later, either through higher turnover at the academy or during field training or later on as problem employees. Our process, we have not changed that aspect of it, so we're hoping and anticipating that we haven't made any changes that would increase unsuitable candidates. We have experienced a higher number of applicants over this past year, particularly over the past 6 months, that have allowed us to get these higher recruitment numbers in place. We believe that we've tried to keep our process intact and not compromised to be able to get the best. However, the reality is, no matter how well you try to select the best people, sometimes people do get through the system that either are unsuitable, which we have, we have experienced very few of those, but more that find that it is not necessarily the job that they had signed up for. No matter how much you tell them what the job is, they come to a realization that maybe that's not for them.
Yes, Senator Passman.
Is there any concern that the number of qualified applicants is declining as a ratio? In other words, maybe 5-10 years ago, there were 3 qualified applicants for each position, and it may be down to 1.2 qualified applicants per position, to where, you're saying you're keeping the standard the same. Is there any concern that the Department of Public Safety has in that regard?
Through the chair. I think in general law enforcement has experienced a decline in the number of applicants willing to take law enforcement positions as a profession. I think also that there has been a fairly significant change in the social makeup of the applicants that we get and their backgrounds, their experiences, and how they view life as well. So there are some challenges in that area as well, probably just as when we were growing up, our parents felt that we were different from them. We're experiencing the same thing as well. We do generally and have in the past also experienced a attrition and turnover rate at our academy of about 20% to 25%. So we anticipate that would be the rate going into this academy session as well. And we're hoping that our lateral hire pool that we have available to us can help fill those positions as we need to backfill.
Okay, thank you. Continue, please.
Thank you. Page 4 is the VPSO program. Some highlights for this. We currently have 10 contracts with the nonprofit corporations or entities, and those are listed on the left. I don't need to highlight those for you, but on the right, we currently have filled 51 VPSOs statewide. Our FY10 funding will allow us 60 positions. In the past, we've also funded some positions through available federal grant funding, which we continue to apply for, and if we get that funding, we'll certainly try to increase our numbers as well. Those grants also enable us to provide better quality and more frequent training equipment and supplies as well. And not only for just VPSOs, but we also provide that for villages that have VPOs as well to improve the quality of their officers. Excuse me. On July 1st, we raised the base wage for VPSOs from $17 to $21 an hour. And although it's pretty recent, it's only 6 months so far, it's pretty recent to be able to get a good track record on how this is working. But so far, it looks like that is working on getting more applicants and more people interested in taking those positions in these rural communities. We're experiencing more applications and doing more background investigations for the contractors. The turnover rate for existing VPSOs seems to have slowed as well. So if there's any questions as to whether or not that raise is working, preliminarily I can say that it appears to be. We recently had a academy start. We started with 19. There's 12 VPSOs remaining in that academy. They're about a little over halfway through. And we anticipate the remainder of those 12 actually making it and going on to the communities. Those 12 are part of the 51 numbers. And there is a difference on how we run VPSOs as opposed to troopers. For example, troopers, when we hire them, they go through training before they go out into the field. VPSOs, we have one academy a year. Generally, when we hire a VPSO, they start immediately with close supervision in their community and with the troopers, and they'll work until they get more training or specific academy training. There's a couple of things that we've identified that we know helps to keep VPSOs in the communities. One of those is pay and benefits. A second one is the amount of community support that individual has and support within the community towards public safety in general. And a third one is how much support the individual gets from the troopers as well that will provide oversight, direction, and some training and things of that nature. We're trying to increase the number of village oversight visits that support VPSOs. Last year we did 2,340. We hope to increase those. 2,340 seems to be a big number, but actually that number can be improved. The VPSOs also over the last several years have received increased training in DUI enforcement and also domestic violence and sexual assault response type training, and they are becoming more and more valuable with that training. An example, last year, VPSOs conducted 238 DV and assault arrests and also 57 DUI arrests, and respectively, that was up 51% and 63% over the previous years. Those are the type of offenses that troopers probably would normally have to handle, and with this additional training, these VPSOs are certainly capable and doing a good job. We also continue our probation and parole RSA with the Department of Corrections. And the RSA allows us to pay VPSOs a slightly higher wage for helping corrections with those functions. In some cases, it's several dollars an hour. And it's very beneficial to the state and to corrections in the sense that people that are being released from institutions are able to go back into their communities, and VPSOs are able to assist with the oversight once they get back into the communities. We also are encouraging and taking advantage of DARE training, which is drug abuse resistance education. And we have about 20 VPSOs currently trained. We're also able to get a waiver from DARE on the way that program is administered because we are incapable of administering a DARE program in schools the way it's designed and required to be. But the DARE program understands the very unique logistical constraints that we have in our communities, and they're allowing us to do it this way. So that's very, very beneficial.
Okay, Senator Kucher has.
Madam Chairman, you have a question, please. Senator Olson had a task force about a year ago on VPSOs. How many of his recommendations have you implemented? Most of them, all of them, half of them?
Off the top of my head, I can't recall every recommendation that was in there, but he had several. The most important recommendation he had was to raise the VPSO wages from $17 to $21 an hour. And that one, obviously, I'd already talked about, and it has been done. There is also some concern in that study that talked about the support with facilities and training and in housing. But we haven't been able to make any headway in housing. Mm-hmm. But we have been able to make some headway in assisting with the communities with facilities and upgrading facilities with state funds to improve the offices, to improve mm-hmm. the temporary holding facilities and things of that nature. And those are priorities we'll continue to work on.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Moving on to page mm-hmm. 5 is the Alaska Wildlife Troopers, and they are similarly comprised as AST is comprised with detachments. They also have Wildlife Investigations Unit, a reinforcement section, and a aircraft section. In 2008, Wildlife Troopers conducted over 58,000 resource user contacts, which is up from the previous year by several percent. And the violation rate, or the contact to violation ratio for those contacts is currently at 8.5% for 2008, which is actually a decrease from the previous year. And if you just take the two numbers and correlate them, it appears that the more contacts that we're making, the better able to reduce violations or encourage compliance with wildlife laws. Another big area that Wildlife Troopers were involved in over the last couple of years is recreational boater safety. Recreational boating safety deaths in Alaska have been tragic, the number of deaths that have occurred in Alaska. And in the 80s, they were averaging around 40 or so a year. And through efforts of the U.S. Coast Guard, the Department of Natural Resources Boater Safety Program, and the Wildlife Troopers over the last couple of years, there's been a combined effort to increase safety and increase education and also the wearing of PFDs in rural areas as well as urban areas for recreational boaters. Last year, Wildlife Troopers alone conducted just about 8,200 contacts, and the number of deaths in 2007 was 17, so it's showing some remarkable success over the 80s, certainly, and over the 90s, and then the 2008 numbers were 12. So we hope that trend continues as well. The question is, can we ever get it to zero? And I would hope that we would. The Wildlife Troopers are also continuing some of the cooperative efforts with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and National Marine Fisheries. And in particular with the National Marine Fisheries, we have a joint enforcement agreement, which we're now on the 8th iteration of. And that's an annual agreement that brings federal funds to the state to assist with resource protection. And it allows specifically the state to provide oversight on fisheries that are joint fisheries, that are both state and federal fisheries, in areas where we would not have been able, because of our current funding levels, to provide those patrols. And a lot of those are up in Bering Sea or Western Aleutians and Kodiak. It also funds a number of public safety technicians that assist the troopers in performing their duties as well. So that's been a very beneficial program for the state, and it appears to be continuing. Last year and this upcoming year, we're going to be focusing on protecting wild stocks as opposed to farm-raised or hatchery-raised salmon, rather, not farm-raised. Computer forensics is an area that's growing within the Wildlife Troopers as well, and that is the use of computers to assist in documenting or retrieving information off of computers that document or are evidence of crimes that are happening, not only in some of the recreational or sport hunting and fishing, but also with commercial guiding and commercial operations. We have one, it's becoming so prominent now within our investigations, we're dedicating one investigator position specifically to focus on the computer aspect of these crimes. A challenge within the wildlife troopers continues to be relative inexperience level. We are still working on that, and we are looking at reinstituting lateral transfers directly into the division from other experienced wildlife enforcement officers from either in the state, from our federal partners, or also out of state. Fire and life safety is comprised of the Life Safety Inspections Bureau, Plan Review Bureau, Training and Education Bureau, Office of Rural Fire Protection, and the Joint Pipeline Office. The fire deaths in 2007 was 24, in 2008 was 19. We have experienced a fairly significant spike in frequency of fire deaths in 2009 already. I think they've been fairly well publicized. Some of those have been at least cursory attributed to the cold snap and alternative fuels or heating that have been used. I can't really answer any specifics on this, but if you have some specific questions, I can certainly get back to you or Fire Marshal's office.
Okay, thank you.
Some things that are occurring over the last couple of years that have increased the efficiency of this division are one is the 11 deferred jurisdictions that we currently utilize or monitor that will help us with inspections and plan reviews. And what a deferred jurisdiction is, instead of having a Division of Fire and Life Safety employee conduct a plan review or site inspections, there are 11 jurisdictions such as Municipality of Anchorage or other boroughs that have very robust programs that can do that have the expertise to do these kind of inspections, and they do them under our watch. We've instituted a two-year audit cycle for those 11 jurisdictions, which is new, and this will allow better oversight as far as what their plans are. The division itself did 1,543 inspections, which is 143% increase over 2007, with a compliance rate of 35%, and also 1,024 plan reviews, which is an increase over 2007. So the efficiency of that division is becoming more and more apparent. They're also utilizing some other cooperative efforts to get to help meet the needs of within this area, and that is with a new annual fire and building officials forum. And what that forum does is it gets our state division personnel and managers in with other entities, building managers and fire service professionals together in a forum to talk about common issues and problems in the fire safety and life safety realm that can be dealt with a lot more efficiently and effectively. Initially, when we did that, it was met with a lot of skepticism on the outside partners, and they are embracing this wholeheartedly now and see it as a very beneficial activity for us. We also introduced the Raven Island interactive computerized fire safety game. It allows kids to get on and play online on a interactive video game that is all surrounding fire safety messages. We're opening an office of oil and gas systems and facilities, and what this is probably the easiest way to describe is an expansion of the Joint Pipeline Office that we're currently operating for plan review and inspections. What this does is it expands the unit to do inspections along all of the pipelines that are currently under state control, as opposed to just the Alyeska pipeline.
Okay.
It also positions us, if we need to expand at a later date, for the, for a natural gas pipeline if it's built. Statewide services, I'll just briefly hit this so that way that you have time for questions if you want to answer, or ask me, rather. And that is, one of the things we need to do to have the department become more efficient is develop the technologies that are available to us and continue with some of the technology development that we've already got in place. Critical to doing a good, effective job within public safety is having a good records management system, sharing data and records with our other public safety partners, whether it's Department of Law, Department of Corrections, other police agencies, or even within our own department. We've got a number of initiatives that we're moving forward with this year that are directly within that realm, some of which provide some challenges to our Statewide Services Division, but certainly that they are up to. One of the things I want to highlight also is the Alaska Law Enforcement Information Sharing System, which is ALIAS, which we are requesting funding for in 2010. This system is a specific program that connects agencies together on their from their records management systems that will allow, for example, if one of the troopers was near the border and was had a partial plate or a description of a person or name, they could run it in the system against all of the other participating agencies and develop connections that may be able to provide suspects. So far, it's been very successful in the state. The state of Alaska is currently not a contributing member for information. There are some other significant agencies that are, like the Anchorage Police Department and the Juneau Police Department, Seward Police Department, Kenai as well. Getting our information available will double the capability of this system. We're currently 75% of the users of the system now, just from our intelligence department and our drug units. So it's already, we already know it's a critical system, we just got to get connected in. There are some numbers on this page as far as the number of sex offender registration and the non-compliance rate, which is about 4.5 to 5%. There's currently 2,458 registered sex offenders, 7,802 active concealed handgun permittees. The AFIS section, which is automatic fingerprint identification system, processed over 60,000 fingerprint cards last year into the system, and only 26,000 of those are for criminal cards. The rest are applicant cards, background investigation cards for school teachers, bus drivers, security guard licensing, things like that. On page 8, I want to highlight a couple of things that are significant within our office, and one of those is the Office of Professional Standards. Currently, internal investigations within the Department of Public Safety have been conducted by field supervisors and field commanders, and although those have, I could say, are high quality and been done very well, they do tend to lag on because these commanders and supervisors have already overtasked responsibilities with their own units to manage and supervise. This allows us, by opening this unit, allows us to bring those investigations under the commissioner's office with dedicated and trained investigators that can take these complex cases and do them fairly quickly, and then also better allow us to monitor and track progress of them. We could also, as part of this, we're looking at software that will allow us to track trends and be able to also use as an early warning tool to flag potential problem officers as well. So we're excited about this, and we're moving forward robustly or quickly with getting this online, so it'll be a benefit not only to the department but to the citizens of the state. APSC, which is the Alaska Police Standards Council, was expanded by two members to incorporate line officers, which is a result of legislation last year. I've already mentioned the VPSO training. The Alaska Fire Standards Council is offering training and certification to 6,100 career officers, or career firefighters, rather, and volunteers in the state as well. So that program is taking off and becoming a great benefit. The Council on Domestic Violence, Sexual Assault, last year provided funding to 24 victim service programs across the state, which serviced 8,000 plus victims. Also funded and participated in 77 training sessions for law enforcement advocates, prosecutors, the court, as well as others, on specifics for combating domestic violence, sexual assault, and then statutes, and then investigative techniques. This year, CDVSA is going to be focusing on strategic planning with both local and state entities to boost our domestic violence and sexual assault prevention efforts. The Alcohol Beverage Control Board, we have a brand new director. It was announced, actually she started right after the new year. That's Ms. Shirley Gifford. And Ms. Gifford is a longtime Alaskan, retired from the Anchorage Police Department, was the chief of police for Soldotna, and was also a member of the ABC board for a number of years. So she's a great addition to the department and to the ABC board. We think there's going to be some great strides there. And we also had in the ABC board a short-term non-perm investigator over the last couple of years, which we've been utilizing for investigations. And that has been a very good program, and it's so much so we have made that position a permanent full-time investigator's position and make it a permanent part of that unit. The crime lab. Some significant highlights of the crime lab is there had been some backlog in previous years, both in DNA submissions and also case analysis submissions. The result or the reason for that was vacancies in large part, and over the past year the lab has filled all of its positions, so we currently have all of the scientific positions filled. There are still some of those positions that are in training, so they're working towards getting fully functional. But over the past several months, we've experienced some significant decreases in our backlog and in some of our DNA samples that are entered into the CODIS system. The CODIS system a couple of months ago had 8,000 backlog samples, and we're currently at 6,000, and we're eating away that number at about 2,000 a month. So we expect to be fully up to speed on those by July. The lab had 4,500 cases submitted last year. 78% of those we were able to turn the analysis and reporting around within 30 days. The lab also recently renewed its accreditation, national accreditation. And this lab that the state runs is truly one of the best run labs in the state. And it certainly has some challenges with facilities and space and the ability to perform functions based on just some physical constraints. But the quality of personnel in the lab, the quality of management in the lab, and the procedures in place to ensure things are done correctly is a national level and one of the finest in the country. One of the challenges I've already hit on a little bit, and that is space. The current lab was built in the 80s and was designed to accommodate 23 scientists. Currently, there are 42 scientists assigned to the lab. 40 are working within the lab. We have several outside of the lab because there's simply not enough space, and we have them in Palmer, for example. There are some trends with the lab that are on the horizon. The biggest emerging trend is advancement in DNA testing. Currently, the lab uses some DNA testing types, and I don't recall the type that they're using currently, but they're bringing on new types of testing, particularly low-copy DNA and mitochondrial DNA testing. And those types of testing are much, much more effective and they are able to detect a lot smaller finite samples. The problem with our existing lab is we don't have space that is capable of supporting this type of DNA testing. Also, the lab is not capable currently of adequately housing the number of personnel it has or accommodating other testing that we're doing there. So that continues to be a challenge. As you're probably aware, last session there was money allocated by the legislature for the advancement of a new lab. That new lab, there's a couple of things that are happening with it I'll give you an update on. One, the land lease, we're entering into an agreement with the municipality of Anchorage. That agreement is very near completion and near signing. The design work for the new lab was completed and is under current validation review, and we expect that validation review to be completed within the next couple of weeks. They initially gave us an expected date of the end of January. And that validation specifically to ensure that what assumptions we've made on the type of work needed, the type of scientific evidence and testing needed within the state, and then what the future holds for different types and needs is properly, the assumptions are proper, and that space and design of the new lab is in conformance with that, those proper assumptions. So those tests or that report should be coming soon. That's a pretty extensive but quick overview of the Department of Public Safety as far as what we have going, major initiatives, and then also the structure. So I am happy to answer.
Hey, thank you for your presentation and your overview. Are there any questions from the members?
Madam Chair, if I
yes,
could have
Senator Pascavan.
What type of court records would the Department of Public Safety like to have its officers on the street have access to in their vehicles? In other words, what would be useful to them, if any?
Through the chair, Senator, the court records that may be valuable, and I'm speaking from more of an experience level than people telling me directly, but I can tell you if I was an officer on the street, from this perspective, that the writs that may be out there, specifically domestic violence restraining orders, would be very helpful. Conditions of release would be very helpful. Certainly all of the information a lot of the information that's currently within APSIN, the Alaska Public Safety Information Network, which is housed in the Department of Public Safety, would be very important to be able to have access to, which is also part of the initiatives that we have going forward on mobile data terminals within their laptops, within the patrol cars, or actually we have some laptops being tested in Western Alaska as well that troopers are taking to communities with them. But those type of things, real-time information out of APSIN, real-time information regarding some specific court records for the things I mentioned.
Okay, thank you. Senator Kukesh, do you have any questions?
Thank you.
I have just one question on the topic of defined benefits. Have you heard in your conversations with your officers for retention that is there a moderate amount of grumbling, or would you speak to that since that there is a Senate bill coming before us this year?
Yes, Madam Chair. I've had several conversations regarding this topic with some department employees, but I can say that probably most of the conversations I've had have been directed at me specifically from some of the labor unions. The benefits are being argued both ways, and you know, so I'd be hesitant to give you an opinion right now as far as which I would prefer to see. But there are certainly arguments going both ways as far as what's most beneficial to the employee, what's most beneficial to the state, whether or not the existing system is a detriment to recruitment and retention. Those arguments certainly are out there, and I'm hearing them. But I dare not probably at this point venture too much further than that.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your comments. Okay, I guess then, considering the time, we have 5 minutes before, so I'll take a brief at ease. And to show, please, that we have a presentation by the Department of Administration and Overview. And would you like to come forward and state your name and your affiliation, please?
Good morning, Madam Chairman. My name is Annette Kreitzer, and I'm Commissioner for the Department of Administration. We've provided you with a packet of information, I think, that you have there, to just give you an overview of our department and to describe a little bit of what we do at the Department of Administration. In your packet, you should have a screen print from our main webpage. Mm-hmm. So you'll recognize it when you see it, or when your staff are looking for things, they'll know what it should look like when they get to the main page. We've given you a summary of our executive working group experience, Administrative Order 237. We have created an executive working group to deal with issues of recruitment and retention. We've given you a brochure that describes the divisions that I'm going to talk about today. And then we also gave you a brochure from our Division of General Services that talks about the contracts that the state enters into that save us money. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how we reach out to municipalities and extend those savings to them.
So if I may interrupt just real quick, I'd like the record to note that Senator Kukash is not with us, and but please carry on. And then I would be amiss if I didn't introduce, please. This is my committee aide, and her name is Deborah Prater, and I'm very fortunate to have her here as well today. Thank you. Please continue, and I'm sorry for the interruption.
No problem, Madam Chairman. The Department of Administration has three main parts, but one main function. We are the place where the legislature will put an agency when it wants to put an agency somewhere so it's sort of at an arm's distance from other agencies that it might have to rule against or take an adverse action against. And one of those examples would be the Alaska Office of, AOGCC, which is Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. And so they reside in the Department of Administration rather than in the Department of Natural Resources, which would seem like a better fit, mm-hmm. but because they may be called upon to rule against DNR, that's why they're in the Department of Administration. It keeps them at arm's length from another agency that they may have to rule against. We also have what are called centralized services, and we provide services to other departments. I'll talk about that a little more. And we have public-facing agencies like the Office of Public Advocacy and Public Defender's Office, and I'll talk a little bit more about that. But our main function is to save the state money by centralizing services so that payroll, mailroom functions, personnel, and computer standards are not replicated across each department. So the arm's length relationship agencies, let me talk about them just a little bit and my relationship to them. They are the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the Alaska Public Broadcasting Commission, the Alaska Public Offices Commission, and the Violent Crimes Compensation Board. And my role as the commissioner is to work with them. I introduce myself to their board members as they change. We offer our services to them, for instance, with APOC. Last year, they replaced their executive director, and instead of having a group of essentially volunteers trying to figure out how do we recruit, how do we write questions, to do interviews, they have at their disposal our Division of Personnel to assist them in that kind of an activity and to give them advice on how to go forward. The decision remains theirs, but we're there to support them and help them. We also, in preparing budgets, are working with them and preparing that and bringing it to the governor and working with OMB on all of their budget issues and potential legislation. We try to work with them and just be a sounding board and help them get that through the process, the internal process in state government before it comes to you. Okay. So it's a fine line to walk because it's they're independent agencies, but yet we do the budget prep. We help them where we can with personnel issues. So it's just a fine line for me as a commissioner to walk. Then there are the centralized services that I talked about. Personnel and labor relations, you probably know we handle all of the labor grievances and the arbitrations for state agencies, for the other departments. I negotiate the contracts with the 11 state employee unions. And a big part of what we do and are working on and have been since I was appointed commissioner in 2007 is recruitment and retention. And that's the purpose and the reason for providing you the update on where we are on following through on those recommendations in your packet. And at any time after this meeting, you have questions about anything we've given you here today, please just either shoot me an email or give me a call, and I'm happy to respond to the entire committee with answers to your questions if you'd like.
Thank you.
We also have our Office of Administrative Hearings. Prior to the Office of Administrative Hearings, most, I don't want to say clashes with departments, but when you had an issue with the department where you felt like the department maybe made a mistake in judgment, it would go through a division director up to a commissioner, and the commissioner would essentially, in many cases, say, gosh, the director was right, and according to the law and according to how we have to proceed. And that left some people with the impression that commissioners were maybe just rubber stamping division directors and not really sitting as an unbiased person reviewing the action that had been taken. Senator Terrio sponsored legislation a couple of years ago creating this Office of Administrative Hearings. They're called central panels in other states. And so what they do is they sit and review these kinds of questions for many state agencies and make an objective determination. And I think it's working really well. I think people have a lot of confidence in that because it's not a person from within the agency. It's almost as though you're going before a judge and saying, this is our side and this is the other side, and make a determination. So we have them, again, in our in my department. And we provide that service for many state agencies. So that's why I consider it a centralized service, even though we have that sort of arm's length relationship with them as well, because they are an independent agency. They do provide that service to the other departments. Of course, Division of Motor Vehicles. I can talk about that forever if you want, but I don't think you do. Risk management deals with all of the issues of risk and assessing that for the state, and that's also in our department. Enterprise Technology Services, they are basically the backbone for communications for the state of Alaska. Finance, in the Division of Finance, we created the online checkbook. The governor visited National Governors Association and came back and said, you know, we need to find a way to make state purchases more transparent, and how can we do that? Can't we put a checkbook online? And we talked about that and said, you know, I think that we can do that, and we did it at very, very low cost to the state. Essentially, it's an Excel spreadsheet that you can search, and you can find a link to it from our main page and then also on the Division of Finance website if you want to go in and just look and kind of see the kinds of purchases that are out there. We get asked by other states all the time, how did you do that? And so Kim Garnera, our Division of Finance Director, constantly is answering those questions from other states who are setting aside millions of dollars to do a similar thing that we did with just staff time and a very nice Excel spreadsheet. It is very searchable. I mean, you can do a lot fancier things, but what we want to do is get the information out there, get people used to being able to use it, and then seeing refinements as we have time and opportunity to do that. The State Travel Office is also in the Division of Finance. I think it's the previous administration created the State Travel Office to help bring down the cost of travel statewide. Before the State Travel Office, it was very difficult And I know, because I had been in the Lieutenant Governor's office previously and also worked for the legislature prior to that. I made this call, I don't know how many times in the 10 years in the legislature and 4 years in the Lieutenant Governor's office. I've called many, many times saying, you know, can you tell me how much the state spends on travel? No, we can't tell you that. But the state travel office, they can tell how to do that. They provide reports to managers so that managers can look at travel in their own divisions and get a better handle on, is this travel necessary? And especially right now, as we're looking at trying to make reductions in the FY09 budgets, these travel management reports are especially helpful to directors and other managers and to me to look at travel within my department and within the divisions to make sure that we're doing all that we can to keep people only traveling when it's necessary. I also will say that it has changed behavior. Prior to the state travel office, people will buy tickets that could be upgraded to first class, which are more expensive than the MCKK fares that we used to get under the contract. And we just have entered into a new contract, so it's been restructured a little bit. But they're more expensive tickets, and primarily just because they wanted the flexibility to upgrade to first class. That behavior has changed with the state travel office because you have to justify why you want a more expensive ticket, and it's pretty hard to come back and say because I want to be upgraded to first class. So it has been useful in that regard. We get a lot of, I don't want to say a lot of complaints, but we continue to get complaints about it because it does modify people's behavior. And there is the perception that I could go online and I could do it cheaper myself. Well, if we were only talking about you, that's possible. But when you look across departments, overall, it saves the state money. Mm-hmm. General services, this is the brochure that's in your packet there. It talks a little bit about our purchasing power, the state's purchasing power, and how we extend that to municipalities. We have members, we know it's working, our outreach is working, because now when we have meetings and we go out and talk to groups who are representing municipalities, we'll have people stand up and say, I've used it, it works, it's helpful. I used to run a rural clinic in rural Alaska, and for me a big issue would have been getting oxygen in cylinders out to that clinic. So this kind of contract approach really can help small communities where they really need every dime and be able to help them pool their resources to get a bigger bang for the buck. So we've made a concerted effort to make sure we're getting that word out to folks on how they can better save money. Our public agencies, the Public Defender Agency, we're constitutionally mandated to provide a defense where an offender can't provide their own. So it's sometimes people don't like the idea that we have to defend the adults, but constitutionally we don't have to defend the children. But that's the way that it is. So in the Defender's Office, that's a lot of what they do. The Office of Public Advocacy also has a guardian ad litem program. They have a CASA program, which you've probably heard, court-appointed special advocate program, where they go to court on behalf of children. Very important work. And on any of these divisions, I'm happy to provide more information, put you in direct contact with the division director if you have very specific programmatic questions. And of course, in our agency, we also have retirement and benefits division, which anytime during your 90 days that you're here, if you have difficulty, please just let me know if you have some issue, because we're cognizant of the fact that you're only here for 90 days and you may need to have a very quick answer to your question. So just let us know if you have any questions there or need assistance. That's a quick brief overview of what the department does. We are a very diverse agency. We have about 1,048 employees in the department. And I should have introduced the folks who came in the door with me. Deputy Commissioner Kevin Brooks and our Administrative Services Director, Eric Swanson. So you'll see both of them in many of the hearings, and Eric certainly in all of our budget hearings. So if you have any questions.
Any questions, Senator Pascoe?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate you coming. And is there anyone else in the audience that has any? Give you an opportunity for any questions. Okay, well, with that, I certainly appreciate your presentation, and we'll be talking to you. I'm sure we have just getting started here. We're kind of lonely up here today, but we certainly appreciate you taking the time. I understood you had a previous engagement to today, so okay. All right, then. Thank you. Well, I'd like to thank each one of you for coming, and with that, I'll adjourn this meeting.